Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, your host, and Phil Conlon is here. And how are you doing, Phil?
Good afternoon, Phil.
Going to talk to Rick Sterling, a member of the Syria Solidarity Network, someone who has been following the events in Syria for many, many years and writing very ably about the matter. We want to talk, of course, about the alleged chemical attack and its possible sources. And we will talk to Stephen Gowans in the second half, who also has been writing on the same matter. We think the issue deserves as much attention as we can bring to it because the propaganda around this matter is very heavy. And we want to announce some events. Phil, there's one in...
Yes, well, 3 weeks from today, on April the 30th, you can go to Hamilton, and that is the hcsw.ca is your website, and you can hear the Reverend Naeem Atiq talk about a theological discussion of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
It's liberation theology. He's a Palestinian minister of the...
He's in the Anglican Church of Canada. Yeah.
Right, and it's the New Vision United Church, 7 p.m., and in light of what's going on in the world, it would be a good idea to go to that meeting. And let us tell you, there's a demonstration at this moment, in a half hour, I estimate, at Bloor and University, where there is a – I just got this as I came in the door, so I can't tell you who's sponsoring it, but I know I support them. They are demonstrating in condemnation of the Israeli use of lethal force against unarmed demonstrators.
Yeah, I think Independent Jewish Voices is one of the sponsors.
Very good. Well, I think we are joined by Rick Sterling. Are you there, sir?
Yes, I am, Phil.
Hey, Rick, thank you for joining us. This is a fast-developing story with a lot of dangerous elements to it. When we originally contacted you to talk, we, of course, intended to focus primarily on the matter of the allegation about use of chemical weapons in Douma. But, of course, in the 24 hours since, we've learned that somebody has and there's been an aerial attack on Syria, so I want to get your thoughts on that. But I guess we should start with this matter of what appeared to me to be the last moments of a rather desperate group of terrorists. I don't know their label. I'll leave that to you. But the Syrian army is prevailing, has been. Mm-hmm. And there's actually quite dramatic footage coming from Vanessa Bealey showing the people who've been held as hostages for many years being rescued from that very zone, I guess, of combat. And then all of a sudden we hear that there's been a chemical attack and the president is considering doing something about it. What do you make of that allegation and why it comes up now and what do you think about it?
Well, actually, I was looking back in my notes, and almost 1 month ago, the Russian news agency TASS had a story titled U.S. Planning Missile and Bombing Raid Against Damascus, and that would be after a provocation. The U.S. plans to accuse Syria's government forces of using chemical weapons. Mm-hmm. And so the chief of Russia's general staff, Valery Gerasimov, said this a month ago. He predicted that one of the armed factions would, in collusion with their supporters in the West, would fake a chemical weapons incident, and that would be used to justify a U.S. attack. And it looks like that's where we're headed. Now, in that same TASS story, from March 13, the general says that in the event of a threat to our military servicemen's lives, Russia's armed forces will take retaliatory measures to target both the missiles and their delivery vehicles. So this is – we're entering very dangerous
You could put that in italics, couldn't you?
Yeah, exactly. So it's very dangerous. The big picture is that – for 7 years, the West, the NATO forces primarily, along with Saudi Arabia and the Gulf monarchies and Israel, have been pouring billions of dollars a year, financing a mercenary army of over 100,000, trying to overthrow the Syrian government, and the project is failing. The Syrian government for years now has steadily been recapturing control of all the most populated areas, Homs, Aleppo, and now this this area on the outskirts of Damascus called the Eastern Ghouta. And it seems that what's going on here is that the forces of reaction, the hawks, those who basically advocate for Israeli and Saudi interests are doubling down. They're going all in to stop the Syrian government from prevailing in the conflict. And they're again using this pretext. Hello?
CIUT 89.5, Toronto.
The Taylor Report. We're here. All right.
Hello. This is the Taylor Report. Mysterious things. I wish I could explain it, but Mama didn't send me to any technical schools, so we'll just have to make do. We're going to get back in touch, we assume, with Rick Sterling, and we hope you're all well. I'll remind you. Maybe I'll say, I don't know, it was this announcement. There's a demonstration at University in Bloor condemning the action of the Israelis in targeting people. And we're going to do our best to get Rick Sterling back.
Yeah, I think the microphone came back on.
And then we'll continue on. We'll get to Gallons. We have a lot of more adventures than I had anticipated. I'm going to say, Phil, we lost a good friend, Tom Power, and we're going to later on in the show. We're going to actually do some music in connection with him, but. He's a memory we want people to appreciate. He was one who stood up.
A very strong supporter of the station and of this program, the Taylor Report, of my program, Classical Underground. He was like a real stalwart.
And yes.
It was always wonderful to know you had this loyal audience out there.
and he was – we live in a hemisphere, and he appreciated the other nations – that are—they used to call them the South, and they don't get respect in this culture, the Northern culture. He was a great admirer of the Cubans, in particular, for standing up to the power, which every Canadian is aware of.
You mean the power that Canada doesn't stand up to?
Yeah, the one that Justin Trudeau is a little bit shy about mentioning. I think we are. Do we have Rick Sterling? Rick, are you there? I'm sorry. We had a little technical glitch. We don't blame it on you. You are saying important things. You were summing up, you were saying that there is some desperation here on the part of three big players, Saudi Arabia, Israel, and the papa player, that would be the U.S., because they are experiencing setbacks, all of them, right? I mean, Saudi Arabia's big campaign in Yemen has – it's underpublicized, and it doesn't seem to be going anywhere.
Right, right. And Saudi Arabia is the big funder of the armed faction that controls or controlled up until recently Douma, that town where the chemical weapon incident happened on Saturday. So Jaish al-Islam, or the Army of Islam, is the terrorist group that's controlled that town. It's basically completely funded by Saudi Arabia. So they're a big player in this, as Qatar is. Israel has been kind of operating behind the scenes. They've provided medical assistance and other kinds of help to terror factions in the Golan region, and they have actually attacked the Syrian forces at various times in support of the terror factions. Mm-hmm. And then the neoconservatives in Washington, the foreign policy hawks, they still believe that this is the new American century, and they're not willing to let it go.
That is probably, at least from my vantage point, the most disturbing element. You have two parties, but they both become—they are war parties, right? And when Trump said, and we all thought he was probably pulling our leg— that he was, he'd like to get out of Syria. Bernie Sanders said, "Oh no, you can't leave."
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't envy you being in the Bay Area, because I don't hear voices. I can remember back at the time of the Vietnam War, there were several prominent, there were senators, there were congressmen who was their piece of. The political scene was that they said, no, I don't agree at all with this, but I don't hear any opposition in your country.
The left in North America and the West, it's not just the U.S., has been demobilized by disinformation on Syria. They failed to stop or denounce or criticize the Western overthrow of the Libyan government. I mean, there were, 15 years ago, there was a lot of opposition to the invasion of Iraq. Mm-hmm. Anybody with eyes to see knew that George Bush was planning that war, and it was a charade they went through beforehand. So there were massive demonstrations against the invasion, for the year preceding the invasion in 2003. But the Libya attack and now the ongoing war against Syria has been done with massive confusion on in the progressive community. So they basically a lot of the disinformation that used to be done by the CIA is now done by what they call civil society groups. Even rescue groups like the White Helmets serve the role to basically broadcast the propaganda and misinform the public.
Yeah, I'm glad you raised that image, because the White Helmets in this instance and previous is the kind of go-to source, and they always describe them as rescuers. However, I've never heard of a rescue organization in war theaters that called on foreign powers to step in and use power to intervene in their situation. Usually rescuers are just worried about saving lives
and
getting support.
Yeah. Well, They're primarily a media and a public relations organization. They have a very effective social media campaign. Their marketing is managed by a group in Brooklyn, New York, and that's part of the problem here. So they have been successful at demonizing the Syrian leader, the Assad, and the Syrian government, so that a lot of people just assume these things are true, that the Syrian government targets hospitals, that they routinely torture people, that they attack civilians. But all the evidence, from the ground, from people who have been there, who have seen them in operation, actually contradicts that.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking to Rick Sterling, Syria Solidarity Network. You don't find Rick's writings, just put in Rick Sterling. He's many articles analyzing this situation. On this matter of chemicals, isn't Syria the one player in the area that has actually been engaged with international agencies and said we had chemical weapons, we no longer have? There's this body that on the prohibition of use of chemical weapons.
Mm-hmm.
Inspected. Wasn't there an agreement that they had that it had been accomplished, that they didn't
that's
have
right.
them? Whereas
yeah, that's
other
right.
players, I want to ask you about this too. The Israel has chemical weapons, we understand. The United States certainly does. And isn't it also true that the some of those groups in Ghouta them have used chemical weapons, and have, and I think in one instance maybe admitted that they did.
Right. Yes. As the Syrian government advanced in eastern Ghouta and basically came to agreements with the different terrorist groups to vacate, to evacuate, they uncovered a chemical weapons lab with chemical weapon ingredients that could have been used. There's also a chlorine gas canister. It looks to be a military canister that was discovered. And if we go back to 2013, actually what the conclusion there, the investigation of Seymour Hersh and a number of others, was that that attack in eastern Ghouta in August of 2013 was carried out by one of the armed factions with the sarin provided by Turkey. And two Turkish parliamentarians actually held a press conference with documentation confirming that. So there was a lot of evidence then. And since then, the accusations go back and forth. But the accusations by the West that the Syrian government is using chemical weapons, when it comes down to it, it's always the White Helmets or some other Western-funded group that's making the accusations, or it's people who may have been coached, people in southern Turkey, or people from rebel opposition-held territories who are making the accusations, and there's little or no concrete evidence. Now, the situation right now is that Douma is on the verge of being totally recaptured by the Syrian government. There was an agreement yesterday. Busloads of militants or terrorists, you know, use your own terminology,
terrorists,
and their families are being evacuated from the area. Tens of thousands of civilians are moving into the government-held territory since the militants aren't preventing them from leaving anymore. So there's the opportunity. If it's true, if the claims are true, well, the White Helmets should provide the detailed information where this happened and have a serious investigation.
Yeah.
Somehow I suspect this is not going to happen.
No, by the way, as you tell that, one realizes it's, to a large extent, as you indicated, it's somewhat propaganda and theater. If you did have a proper investigation, one of the things anybody looking into it would say, and you say you are the White Helmets, what do you do again? And could we look at your work?
Yeah.
Because if you're going to claim you know something,
right, unfortunately,
you know, you got to put yourself in the witness box and show how you know that.
Yes.
They never go into an environment where anybody can interrogate them.
Right.
They just make bold claims.
Right. And actually, as the civilians have escaped from the terrorist-held zones of East Ghouta, they're being assisted by a Syrian Arab Red Crescent. They're being assisted by rescue workers who are legitimate rescue workers, and there's no sight of the White Helmets. We only see them in the videos, which are used to sensationalize the situation and try to get the West to intervene militarily. That's the main area where.
Yeah,
the,
and they're not shy about that, are they? I mean, they've called a number of times for the U.S. particular to do something.
Right. Right. Yeah. No. Exactly. They've done that explicitly, and so has the Syrian American Medical Society, which predates the conflict. I think it was a legitimate organization prior to the conflict, but since then their budget skyrocketed. I took a look at their tax returns at one time, and their tax returns skyrocketed. It's pretty evident they're, or it's very likely they're getting heavy funding from the U.S. Government, and they are another,
which increases their credibility in the way the U.S.
operates.
They're
another propaganda organization. That's the role they play. They have no role. They do nothing to help civilians in other parts of Syria that aren't controlled by Al-Qaeda or one of the other Wahhabi Takfiri organizations.
Well, we're talking to Rick Sterling and Sirius Solidarity Network. Rick, I remember a year ago, and it was almost a year ago, that when Trump first decided he was going to strike Syria, and there was a report that in northwest Syria, I think it was, that there had been chemical agents alleged. And Trump said, our prime minister here said, oh, well, that should be investigated, and the perpetrator should be punished. And he said that like on a Tuesday. On Wednesday, he said, I fully support the actions of the U.S. Now, this is – and you pointed out, we have nuclear-armed, very powerful states bumping into each other here. The two are represented always as equally involved, that is the United States-Russia. But there's a rather serious difference in that description. Could you explain, are they on equal standing in terms of their role in Syria?
No, absolutely not. It's pretty clear. If we look at international law and we look at the finding of the International Court of Justice going back to when the U.S. funded the Contras, trying to overthrow the Nicaraguan government that Ronald Reagan did not like, that cost enormous bloodshed, and the U.S., which basically created the Contras, provided them with money, with arms, with training, with logistics. Their actions were found to be in violation of international law, and they were actually ordered to pay compensation in Nicaragua, which of course they did not do. But what we've got going on in Syria is quite comparable, and the former foreign minister of Nicaragua, Father Miguel Descoto, he confirmed that that opinion to me. He said, yes, what the U.S. is doing, the U.S. and their allies are doing in Syria, is tantamount to the supreme crime of creating war and all of the crimes that flow from that. So the U.S. Is there illegally. They have no authorization from the Syrian government. What the U.S. has been primarily done is in cahoots with Canada and the U.K. and France and the Gulf monarchies in Israel and Turkey, they've been funding a proxy army seeking to overthrow the government. In contrast, Russia came in at the request of its ally Syria and has been supporting the Syrian government, but they're not on equal footing legally by any stretch of the imagination. What the U.S. is doing is an international crime. So that makes it all the more ironic when we hear the cries of war crimes by Assad, who is actually the Syrian government is, you know, on the basis of my visits there, my two trips there, and the research I've done, and all the contacts I have with Syrians and so forth. Assad is quite popular. He's more popular than the Ba'ath Party. And if you watch interviews with him and see him in operation and see the principles he stands for, you can kind of see why. He's a relatively young man. He's very intelligent. He is an ophthalmologist. He was trained as a medical doctor and then an eye specialist. And although he came into the position, you know, through his father's history with the Ba'ath Party, he's basically stood strong in this assault on his country, and he's stood for the principles of secularism, of equality between men and women, of respect for, among all religions. And these are important things in Syria, and it's ironic that Canada, the U.S., and the West has been supporting the most reactionary sectarian groups that will impose all sorts of inequality on women, that all sorts of inequalities between religions. And that is really an extremely violent organization. So this is the irony that we have here now, where black is white and white is black, and it really requires people to follow and read widely, read a lot beyond the mainstream media to understand what's going on. And you actually have to know. You have to be aware that some of our alternative media has not seen through the lies either. So you really one has to be careful.
By the way, just on that last point, there is many in the United States certainly seem now to have imbibed that powerful drink of American exceptionalism.
Right.
We're the arbiter.
Yeah.
They seem to really like that great declaration that there's going to be a new world order, and we're number one.
Yeah. It's horrible. Yeah, I don't know if it's something in the water here or in the U.S. or what it is, but you know, I grew up in Canada myself, so yeah. I am aware of a lot of the common areas, but aware of some of the differences, and I would say that's one of the differences that. Mm-hmm. Canadians don't have quite the same extent. They didn't in my generation of we are entitled to yes. rule the world, which sadly that seems to be heavily promoted. The wording they use now here is leadership, global leadership, and the neoconservatives and the foreign policy establishment here are basically aware that the U.S. is losing credibility, power, and power around the world, and they want to regain that. And the sad situation is that their disasters, the invasion of Iraq, the overthrow of the government of Libya, what they're doing to Syria, the threats against Venezuela, the threats left and right. It's just it's kind of escalating the decline of American standing yes. around the world.
Yes, they've decided to double down, as you said earlier.
Yeah.
Rick, it's been a pleasure talking to you. We apologize for the break on the earlier part of the show. You, as always, it's very enlightening. Thank you very, very much.
Okay, thank you, Phil. Take care.
Bye bye. It's Rick bye. Sterling, and this is the Taylor Report. CIUT 89.5 FM. That's the sound of my phone. I'll get that in a moment. We have a little bit of John Lennon, and we will come back with Stephen Gowans.